Hey guys, welcome to the Dead Set Legends podcast. I'm Gus Wallen. I'm here with Jude Bolt, but it's not Wendell Saylor today. We have got a bloke off the bench who is a fair dinkum legend. It's this man.
If you asked our next guest what his favourite animal was, he'd probably say wallaby. But because he spent so much time playing for them, he's now suffering from green and gold colourblindness. Across his career, he's done it all, playing overseas for Toulon, as well as locally for the Brumbies, Reds and Western Force. He's got the record as Australia's highest try scorer in a World Cup, and he's mates with Wendell Saylor. So life hasn't all been easy. Please welcome Dead Set Legend, Drew Mitchell.
Yeah, Drew Mitchell joins us this morning with Jude Bolt and myself.
Sensational to have you here, mate.
How are you, brother?
No, mate, I'm really good. Thank you. Look, I don't want to get off on a bad note, but I've just got to say, I didn't play for the Brumbies. I played for the Waratahs.
Oh. Righto. Someone's getting sacked in the morning.
Who is it?
Yeah, no worries. Well, I know exactly who that was. Lee, your toast, my friend. No worries.
But no, it's great to be here, and thanks so much. Big shoes to fill, the big man, big seat to fill as
the
well.
Big pants. We brought in his tracksuit one day.
If he could come out with some, I don't know, some opinions, with some advice, some real positive stuff.
He's going to bring it all today. I know that.
Absolute cracking games last night. Did you watch them, Drew?
Yeah, I did, actually. I did. Geez, Ricky Stewart. He can't be happy, can he? He's blowing a 12-point lead again.
Did you see that he walked into the press conference? He was late. He kept them all waiting. He said, I've just been having a beer with Dez, because Dez is my mate. We've known each other for a long time. And I reckon all the journos are going, what's going to happen here? Because like you say, they blew another lead, but we'll talk about that.
Dez must have given him a big halftime rev up. Absolutely.
Well, the thing about Dez is that he's worried about everyone thinking that it's only Tom. If Tom plays, they win. If Tom doesn't play, and it looked that way, didn't it, for 40 minutes, but they got the job done. And we want to talk about the Wallabies. We're meant to be playing them next weekend in Perth, but New Zealand had basically shut the borders and said that won't be happening. So let's go back to the two games that we have had, Drew.
Yeah.
Little pockets of times where Wallabies have been playing well. Was that us playing well, or was that the All Blacks already sort of feeling comfortable and feeling like they already had the game won?
Yeah, look, I mean, part of me, obviously I want to say that it was us playing well. And there were patches where we did play well, to be fair. But I think coming off the back of that French series, the boys found ways to grind out wins, which we probably haven't been able to do in recent years. But then going into these games against the All Blacks at Eden Park, we hadn't won there since 1986, and all that sort of thing was stacked against us. Mm. And the All Blacks, they just showed their class, really. We did come back in both games in the second half. To be fair to the Wallabies, in the second game, 21-16 going in at half-time. And one of those tries to the All Blacks was an intercept 80-metre try. So we're actually in it in the second game at half-time. Second half was an absolute different story. And
They took control, didn't they?
And that's also the worrying thing, and probably the hardest thing to take as a Wallaby fan is how much we rolled over and how many points we leaked. And it was a record score in the end. I think it's 57-35 or something. Just not a performance that they'd be particularly proud of, obviously, but also a tough one as a Wallaby supporter. And, you know, it's been 19 years now since we've won the Bledisloe. And I, you know, I'm not distancing myself from that because I was involved in about 14 of those years. So,
yeah, you could have been better. You could have been better, to be fair.
How do we break that hoodoo, though? What is the mental, I guess, gaps there to break that hoodoo at Eden Park?
I mean, look, I don't know if there's too much sort of mental hang-up with this young crew that's going through. I think, to me, it's the effort areas. You look at the All Blacks in everything they do in terms of, you know, getting up off the ground, any contest that goes to the ground, whether it break down or tackle, they're getting up before our guys. They're getting into the line quicker than us in transition. They're really good at transition. So when they win the ball off the Wallabies and they transition from defence into attack, there's no one better in the world at it than the All Blacks. And if we're not pushing ourselves to get into position quicker and earlier to then try and stymie that attack, then we saw last week what they can do with the ball in hand. And again, there was a particular try with Brody Retallick that ran away. He's a second rower. He was backing up.
No one chased him either.
Yeah, 60-odd metres, right? And there were five or six All Black jerseys and probably two Wallaby jerseys, one of them being Michael Hooper, which you got to get. That's consistent. That's a gimme. But just to see like the turn and burn and the lack of that effort is, for me, the biggest change that we need to make, but it's also probably the easiest. You know, it's a decision you make. You'd know, sometimes when you know you're not going to get necessarily the plaudits for it, or it's not going to end up on a highlight reel, but you're working your backside off to get in that line and to connect with your players, and then all of a sudden they look up and there isn't a fractured defensive line. There's a really really structured one coming at you with line speed. Then all of a sudden it's a different story. But I think the effort areas for me are the biggest area that we need to work on.
So disappointing, obviously, to not have the test, the third test over in Perth, and particularly the fact that 60,000 tickets had been sold as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's really disappointing the way it's panned out as well. I mean, obviously, a fair bit's going on in the media, and that's probably what Rugby Australia have been so disappointed with, was that they had discussions yesterday, and then all of a sudden, without necessarily knowing their decision, they've read about it through a media release.
And social media too.
And a lot of the players are finding it out through social media. And then you think of the Western Australian public that, again, who are super excited to get it over there. And we only, 2019, when the Wallabies won there, it was a huge occasion and a great game, and also a great spectacle for all those fans that were going there to watch. So, look, it's disappointing on so many different levels. And especially when you look at what the Wallabies did last year to accommodate New Zealand coming to Australia and playing the games in a quicker succession so they could quarantine and get home before Christmas, when they wouldn't do the same for us over in New Zealand. So again, that's what Dave Rennie's come out, the Wallaby head coach, come out and said that it looks like there's two parties involved and only one party's really putting the greater good of the game
I think
ahead of their own.
They've forfeited the third game. They forfeit the Bledisloe Cup. They hand it over. It's simple as that. Do you know a streaker? Have you been a streaker? Have you just got onto the field to play somehow and played havoc? No doubt you boys might have been played in some big games that that's happened, or you just know of different stories.
Yeah, one of my great mates from school, actually, Ben Hogan, a few of my mates went over to the Sir Frank Worrell Trophy, Australia versus the West Indies, and they travelled through.
What a tour.
And this was back in the day when, you know, Australia was playing pretty good cricket, but Buffer Lehman was batting out in the middle, and my mate had a few rum and colas the night before, and he was basically falling asleep during the test. But he goes, "Wake me up when Buff Lehman makes his 150. And sure enough, the boys have just rocked him as soon as Buff has made 150. He's woken up. He goes, "I want to shake his hand." Jumps the fence, runs straight out. He's actually still got a beer in his hand. He's run out to the middle, but he's put the beer on the middle of the pitch and shaken Buff Lehman's hand.
And Buff took the handshake?
Took the handshake. Yeah, yeah. And as he's turned around, Ricky Ponting's gone, "Oi, come back and pick up your beer." So they've got a great photo of the beer in the middle and the handshake.
What was he wearing? Was he nude?
Didn't strip right off, okay. But he ran out. But then he had to make the mad dash across. And over there, the fence is so, you know, low and all. They're trying to not let people get in, like streakers and things like that. So he's actually run. They didn't know how he's going to get off. And all he did was run as hard as he could at the fence. It jumped. It hit him just mid-waist. It flipped him. He did a full flip and landed on his back over the other side.
Well played.
Got out. Got
out. What about you, Drew?
Look, no, I've never streaked, but just, it's sort of a bit of a bucket list, isn't it? Like, I'd like to test myself out against some of the security guards, but I remember...
just a little shimmy. Yeah.
Okay, so what event would you most like to streak at? And would you back yourself to go from one end to the other score? Or would you try to just get away from the security guards and jump over the fence and get away with it?
I mean, I'd like to run the length, score a try, and then evade some security guards, make them look a little silly if I can. Otherwise, yep. I'd look silly.
Yeah.
And then jump the fence and hopefully get away with it. But I think as well, if you're going to do it, you have to fully commit, right? Like you've got to.
Do you hold the undies in the hand?
Yeah, you've got to have the undies in your hand because none of your mates are going to give you all your clothes back or any of your clothes back. So you've got to have something in your hand. But I remember Adam Ashley Cooper, a great former Wallaby and a great mate of mine, when he first started playing for the Wallabies, he's a Sunny Coast boy, loves the Central Coast, and the Central Coast Mariners had just sort of really kind of come onto the scene in the A-League. And there was one particular game, I think it might have even been a final, but all these, all spectators just stormed the pitch, and there was this front page.
In excitement,
yeah,
sort of
in
thing.
Excitement. It was all in excitement, and it was a front page paper, and Adam Ashley Cooper just happened to frame himself right in the middle of that picture.
He was a Wallaby at the time.
He was a Wallaby at the time, and I remember, because there's like there's a number of different people, and someone had tipped off the then CEO, John O'Neill, and he had to pull him aside and say, "Mate, now that you're a Wallaby, you kind of can't go around behaving like that. So just pull your head in a little bit."
Beautiful. Talking about streakers off the back of a guy walking at Lord's just onto the cricket field, had his clothes on, but he was dressed as an Indian cricket player.
How confident was he?
He got to the middle, no problem at all. Then all of a sudden, maybe he looked a little bit more like me than you two guys. And someone went, "I don't think he is a cricketer." And they had a quiet word, and the Indian cricketers laughed their heads off. How brazen is it to get the gear and to be so confident to just stroll on there.
Well, because the other thing as well is, as a security guard, they probably wouldn't know what each of the players are meant to look like. So they're in two minds going, am I actually trying to remove a player off the field?
Yeah.
And then there goes my job if I actually end up doing that. Or is it someone who's actually just jumped the fence and who's mimicking one of these players?
I think you need to play it out. You need to let that play, which is probably why you got to the middle. But let's go to one of our callers now. Tony, on the North Connect at the moment. G'day, Tony. Are you a streaker yourself?
I've been known to do it now and again.
Okay, tell us where and why, brother.
All right, so it's always, you know, you always got one of them friends that's encouraging you to do the garden thing.
Yep.
So McDonald's car park. Oh, we're in the drive-thru. Sorry.
Yep.
And we've been out on the piss all night. And he says it'd be funny if one of us got our clothes off, and before he could take your shirt off, I was naked and running through the car park.
Are you in good shape, Tony? Would you feel like you've got, a reasonable package and so forth?
Listen, Gus, there's nothing much going on down anywhere there.
I love the honesty.
So why, Tone?
More of a junior burger than a Big Mac.
Nah, we'll call it a Little Mac.
So why?
Mate, you got what you got. You're not going to change it.
No. Fair enough. Good on you, brother.
It's just a bit of thing. But, I've got one of them, you know, like you said about the one that you want to do. Mine's is at the grand final. Yes. I want to do an intercept on the 10-metre mark and see if I can make a pass of 50.
Oh, right. Intercept, so beautiful. Right. So the team that you're barracking is defending and you take the intercept and try to go the length.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Good thing is I'm a Tiger supporter, so I don't see it happening anytime.
Yeah, that's right, Tone. I'd put it away for a little while. Thanks a lot, Sonny. Time now to talk Ashes, a wonderful new book out. Let's talk to this man.
Our next guest is one of the most respected sports journalists in Australia, covering the world of cricket for over 25 years. He's been able to use his incredible network of trusted relationships within the sport to chat with some of the game's best players. And now he's finally sharing their stories with the world. In his new book, The Ashes, he takes us behind the scenes of some of cricket's most iconic moments and its biggest rivalries. Our very own Gus Warland even features in the book, but don't let that be a turn-off. Please welcome Dead Set legend, Martin Linehan.
Yeah, g'day, Marty. Good morning to you, mate. How are you?
G'day, Gus. Very well, mate.
Mate, you must be so proud of the book. It arrived at my place the other day. It is spectacular, mate. You must be thrilled.
Oh, mate, look, another awesome project to be part of. And, yeah, it just gives you a buzz every time you get your hands on one of these. And, look, grew up watching The Ashes. I've loved it my whole life, and just such a special thing to be able to work on it, talk to some of the great players and present it to everyone. It's just a beautiful book.
Martin, it's Jude Bolton speaking. You mentioned a couple of greats have contributed. Just tell us some of the stories that, you know, people can pick up from the book.
G'day, Jude. Yeah, mate. Look, love talking to Mike Hussey back in 2006. Of course, everyone would remember the amazing Adelaide test where we all turned up on the last day thinking it was going to peter out to a draw, and thanks to Shane Warne and then Mike Hussey hit those winning runs, and I think that was just one of the most memorable wins for Australia. And love talking to Ashton Agar as well about his test debut and just his memories of that day. He made the 98 on debut, and he said, look, batting with Phil Hughes, of course, who we sadly lost a few years after that, and just his memories of sharing that time in the middle with Phil and how focused they were. That was a wonderful story from Ashton.
G'day, Martin. It's Drew Mitchell here, mate. You've just mentioned a couple of big names in the cricket circles, but there's also one that we just heard is in your book that you just didn't mention there. Tell us why Gussie Waller makes a feature in your book.
Mate, one of the biggest names in the world of cricket. look, it was great to talk to Gus. Obviously, everybody remembers Steve Smith coming back from South Africa and the, you know, just the state that he was in and how upset he was and distressed. And when I knew what Gus and Steve had done together and gone to those schools, and I just think it gave Steve Smith a real perspective in his life and a clarity. And, I was just so proud of what he did. And obviously, having known Gus for a few years through Rugby League Week and some other things, it was just great to catch up and talk about how their relationship had started, why Steve decided to do what he did. And just to hear all about that, and just, as I said, and then I spoke to Greg Chappell about it as well, and as he said, it just really helped Steve, I guess, with his redemption and helped put him back on track. So just a great story about what Steve was able to do and the amount of time he put into it as well. And as Gus says in the book, he went way past his required hours he was meant to do. He just wanted to keep on helping. So it was really nice to be able to tell that story.
Yeah, what I love about it, Drew, in particular, was he came back from the Ashes, obviously a wonderful Ashes for him, and he goes, I've got 3 days off, mate. Do you reckon we can get a couple of schools in?
Yeah, well,
so that we were amazing. Saying that before I could even congratulate him on the fact that we'd had no sleep for the last 6 weeks, because I said, I'll go to bed when Steve Smith's out, and he just didn't get out that often. But, yeah, no, he's certainly, I think, a much better person and a cricketer because of that situation that unfortunately he had to go through. But he certainly made everything a winner in the time that he spent with me, and he certainly saved some lives as well, Marty. When I got the book, the photos, beautiful photos, who actually did all those and how did you put all that together?
Mate, the publishing company has a deal with Getty Images, and I mean their library of photos is just remarkable. So a lot of the fun of doing these projects is just typing a name into the search and seeing what you can find. And the art director who's put, I've done 4 sports books now, been lucky to do a few, and this guy is just remarkable. I think, you know, just the way they use the photos and the way it's presented, and the history of the game is just so magnificent to see so many different faces there, and, you know, beautiful photos of Richie Beno and the Chappells in their prime. And I had a chance to chat to Greg Chappell and to Doug Walters just about their wonderful year in the 70s. And, Dougie, I'm not sure remembered all that much about the era, but geez, he was good to talk to. It was just, it was great to go down memory lane. And of course, his famous hook shot to put Bob Willis into the stands to bring up his 100 in the session. So just so many great memories. And just a privilege for me to talk to all these people about, you know, their Ashes highlights and their memories that have meant so much to, you know, Australian cricket fans over the years.
Martin, there's an aura about the Australian dressing room and just, the closeness of the team. What do you make of the current situation with, obviously, the stories that are coming around out about, you know, Justin Langer, and it's a real, you know, fragmented sort of group at the moment, isn't it?
Pretty disappointing. I mean, I won't pretend to know exactly what's going on inside the dressing room. I guess not that many people do, really, and I feel for Justin a little bit because I felt like watching that, particularly the documentary about the Ashes, and we did seem to have such a strong group. And the way that, you know, Nathan Lyon spoke to me about how Steve Smith and David Warner were welcome back, and that was one of the things I really enjoyed hearing, was that Nathan said, look, everybody makes mistakes, but we're in this together and we fight together, and we all remember how special that Ashes was. So, look, I hope that Justin can keep on going. I think it's one of these situations, I guess, in modern sport where perhaps the tough love doesn't work as much as it used to. It's I guess it's a bit of a different environment, but I think he's done a remarkable job from when you think about when he took over and what Australian cricket was going through. So we've got a pretty big summer ahead of us with the Ashes, so I'd like to think we can get things straightened out and hopefully give England a bit of a walloping when they get out here.
Mate, on that note, we're on the cusp of another chapter in Ashes history. How do you see, well, firstly, how excited about this Ashes series are you, and how do you see it playing out?
I think the Ashes are going to be a bit like the Olympics. This is going to be something special. I mean, that was amazing for all of us to be able to watch Australia perform in the Olympics when we're all sort of, a lot of us are locked up, and it was just such a great thing to see. And I think the Ashes will be a bit the same. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see with crowds and how many people can go, but it was lovely to see England get rolled for 120 the other night by India. Yes, so we all know how good India are after how well they played against us in Australia last summer. So I think we all enjoyed that little performance by India. So look, it'll be a fantastic series. The Ashes are always close. It doesn't seem to matter where either Australia and England are in world rankings or how they're going. It'll just be an awesome summer, and hopefully it can go ahead pretty much as planned and people can get out there and just sit in the sun and enjoy the cricket. That would be something really good to look forward to.
Yeah, let's get those vax rates up to 70%, open the world up like everyone else is. Martin, thank you so much for your time this morning on the Dead Set Legends. You're a legend when it comes to journalism, and your book, The Ashes, is an absolute ripper. So get out there, a perfect gift for Father's Day coming up. Martin Linehan, thanks for joining us, mate.
Thanks so much, guys.
There's plenty of blokes, when I said that you were coming on the show, Drew, said, look, can you please get him to tell a story around, well, a story that you can say, because I know some of your stories can be a little bit
long lunches. Look out.
Exactly. So lunch a lot over here. Mr. Jude Bolton's heard it as well. Can you tell us a story that is radio proof around one of your rugby tales?
Yeah. Okay. Look, one thing that rugby has allowed me and afforded me is the opportunity to travel a lot and meet some very amazing people and interesting people. And on this one particular occasion, a Wallabies tour over in the UK, we were invited to Windsor Castle to meet Her Majesty the Queen. And so I'm pretty young and new to the squad. So everything was just like, you know, overwhelming to me at that particular point, going through Windsor Castle. We get to this meeting area, and when I get nervous, I sometimes get into a bit of a giggling fit. And just before Her Majesty came around, Matt Giddo was next to me, and I just start giggling. I just couldn't really contain myself.
Gather yourself.
I did. I just, right at the crucial moment, I gathered myself. I met her, and she's really great at small talk. Effectively, you know, it's what she does day in, day out, right? But after that, I would imagine it get quite tiresome, just meeting new people all day, every day. And once the formalities sort of finished, the room just broke up, and it was just sort of conversations and different little pockets of people talking. And I had an orange juice that I'd finished, and I went to put it on a butler's tray who was walking past. And I said, I went to put it up there on the tray. And he said, excuse me, sir, this is Her Majesty's drink. And I went, oh, okay. What is it? Just like soda water, because it was clear of color. And he said, no, it's a martini, straight gin with a dash of vermouth. And I went,
wow.
Like it's just like Lizzie, it's two it's in the early. Afternoon.
It's early.
You know?
And, Lizzie.
And I watched him walk over to Her Majesty, and he handed the glass to her, and she just sort of grabbed it and didn't bat an eyelid, had a little sip, and just kept talking in her conversation. And I was just amazed. I was just standing there staring at the Queen from afar, having a drink. And then as it sort of played out a little bit, someone walked over to her and just sort of notioned to her, excuse me, you've got to come into this next room to meet someone or have a chat to some other delegate. And I watched her put her glass on the top of a cabinet. Oh. And so I grabbed Matt Giddo. I said, Gitz, just come with me. You've got to block me. And he's like, what? And I said, just quick. And I walked over and I said, just stand here. And I grabbed her drink off the cabinet and I had a sip. And I don't know, maybe because I knew I was doing something wrong, but geez, it was strong. And then I thought, if I get caught here, I'm going down, but I can't go down alone. So I said, Gitz, here, you have a sip.
Oh, you took him down.
Yeah, so I said, you have a sip. And one of the other boys, I think it was Semi Courtney at the time, he had a sip as well. But I always, like, of course, you want to finish the drink, you want to get the backwash of the Queen, right? So if you're going to do it, you may as well do it properly. So I end up finishing the Queen's drink. And
it's like you've patched the Queen.
You've sculled the drink.
That's exactly right. Back in those days, I had Facebook, and my status that day, I changed it to today, I basically kissed the Queen.
All righty, we'll talk about sport again now. The AFL, so much to talk about. The last round of games, they started last night. The Bulldogs did not get the chocolates against Port Adelaide. Can we ask you some questions now, big fella? Let's talk and start with the two Sydney teams. How are they travelling? They're both going to play finals football. Can they win the flag?
Yeah, so they both play today. Sydney play at Gold Coast up at, down at Marvel Stadium. And then the Giants take on the Carlton Blues as well. So there's a massive chance that these two teams could face off in the first week of finals. And we've had some great derby games and Sydney clashes. So I see the Giants being a real dark horse in the final series because they're finally getting their list together again. I feel sorry for Leon Cameron previously because they've been riddled by injuries throughout. And this is a year where I think people have underestimated. They've got such talent on their books, but they haven't been able to get them out on the park. But they're now starting to get them back. They're taking teams on. They're getting their confidence, and that can change the way they look. For the Swans, I mean, they probably have had an exceedingly good year in all facets. I mean, they finished 15th last year. They sit comfortably in sixth spot at the moment. I love the way that they're just taking the game on. Their ball use can be they're the best team from moving it from defensive 50 to inside 50, so they can cut teams up. So they're playing an exciting brand of football. Let's keep that going in terms of a Swans a role and see how they
You must be very proud, brother, as a Swanee.
Oh no, it's great. I think you see this young group come in but I love also the leaders that are playing great football as well. Guys like Luke Parker and Josh Kennedy and then Buddy Franklin as well, and those sort of guys who are performing really well.
Well, if these two Sydney teams face off in the first week of the finals, you're saying you're liking what the Giants have.
I think that's a massive danger game, but I think the Giants could definitely win that that first week. But there's permutations today.
Sure.
There's a chance that the Swans could jump up into fifth position.
What about Buddy? He's got 14 goals to kick before he gets that 1,000. Do you think he can do it this year?
If they have a long enough run into the finals, I think he can. He's been averaging close to 3 goals a game when he's been playing, and he's played a lot of consistent footy this year. So he's a big chance of getting it. But selfishly, I'd probably like to see
do it at home
or something like that.
$13.99 hangover the off season,
and then next year, and then that whole build up.
I'd invade the pitch at that point.
Would
100%,
you?
100%. Yeah.
I was in the inner sanctum of the Tony Lockett when he broke that record. So I was inside of the security guards. I went from the bottom of the noble stand. I just went there for that goal. I absolutely was inside that. You can see me running, little chubby little thing, running there, and I got there, and I was sort of hugging. Sort of him and a security guard, they're the moments we probably wouldn't be able to do anymore.
You wouldn't doubt, yeah. There's such a rare moment, so hopefully they can.
They might let through to the keeper. What about Melbourne? The Melbourne Demons, top of the table. You said about 8 weeks ago they were your specials for the flag. You went a little bit wobbly a couple of weeks later, but you have stayed true to it. What about right now with, obviously with this one round to go?
I think they've played some great football this year, the Demons, and they've got a really tough game against Geelong at GMHBA. Geelong plays such a good brand of footy at home down there, so it's going to be a tough game. But then to actually win that game and move forward and then see who they're lining up, there's so many changes that could happen in that top sphere at the moment. But they're still my tip at the moment because Max Gawn, Luke Jackson, in terms of the ruck duo, looks phenomenal, but their midfield is just really strong. So, for me, I think they're still the leading sort of light for me in the final series, but it's a wide open race at the moment.
And what about Richmond? They've been so strong for a number of years. They had a bit of off-field issues through the off-season with their coach and a few things that we don't have to go over that. But do you think that's had an impact? They're not going to make the eight this year.
It's been a big fall. I mean, the end of an era in many respects. And, Bashahuli, finishes up there, and they've had a couple of other players retire as well. So Asprey's also retired. So, they really have struggled this year. They've lost the aura of playing at the MCG. I think not having crowds at different stages really had an impact. But that proud club that they are, they've just tried to fight their way through. But it's just been a year where it just hasn't worked out for them. I think they'll sort of bounce back next year pretty quickly though.
It's just like the Melbourne Storm missing the eight or the Roosters meeting the eight. If you don't quite follow AFL, that's how strong they've been. They've won three out of the last four flags. So thanks a lot, Jude. Appreciate that. And of course, go the Swannies and go the Giants. How good is the flogometer? We put it away every now and again because Djokovic has been playing tennis. But we're throwing it up there again. It is Drew Mitchell, Jude Bolton and Gus Warland. And we are here for the Dead Set Legends on Triple M. New Zealand Rugby Union. They are flogged, surely, for pulling the pin on the third match of the Bledisloe Cup. Drew Mitchell, flogs or not?
With capitals, flog.
Very much so, flogs.
Absolutely, lock those in. What about Michael Zarafa for saying that Tim Zhu is living in a fantasy if he thinks he is good enough to compete on the world stage? Now,
this is from a no-show flog. Yeah. He is like,
I don't want to go to Newcastle.
Backed out on the eve of the fight, and now he's... No, don't take down Tim Zhu for us.
Right? Tim Zhu is the real deal.
You're a flog, Zarafa.
You're a flog.
Yeah, flog. Michael, flog, Zarafa.
Flog. Okay, I'm going to play you a little bit of audio here. Christian Welch for getting lippy during Thursday night's clash with the Titans and saying this to Tyron Peachy.
Hey, Christian, walk away, mate, really.
Hey, I'm just telling him, stop sucking, mate. Get up, let's go.
Stop sucking, mate, get up and go. And I can sort of understand that to a certain degree because... I'm not sure if the Storm stay down. The Roosters certainly don't stay down, but teams have been doing that to earn a penalty.
Yeah, not a flog for me.
Yeah,
not a flog.
I reckon get up.
Yep, so you're at your suite. Yep. You wouldn't lie down?
No.
Okay,
no.
So not a flog for me either. Not a flog. Beautiful. What about Kevvy Walters for saying that Reece Walsh is always welcome back to the Broncos despite not giving the kid a go? Well, Kevvy, mate, isn't it a little bit too late?
Bit late now, but not a flog for me.
Not a flog?
Flog comment, but not a flog.
Yeah, so not a flog bloke.
He's a friend of the show.
He's a friend of the show. I reckon he's a flog. Flog. Yeah, exactly. You can't have your cake and eat it too. What about the state lockdown for being the reason our favourite restaurant, the Golden Century, in Dixon Street
is
shutting?
This was final straw for me.
Really knocked me around.
Flogs.
Flogs.
Flog. Let's get a GoFundMe or something.
Flog. Last one, boys. The idiots who are planning to protest today and send us into lockdown until Christmas. Please, if anyone is listening, you are a bunch of flogs. Do not come and protest today, Drew.
Flogs.
Flogs. Flogs.
Oh, you and jump in as well?
Yeah. Get on the back of that.
Flog.
flog.
There you go. There's flog or not. And that's the show. Yeah, exactly. You're about to say something about Drew Mitchell.
Mate, how good's he been? I mean, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law. And once you're in the hot seat, yeah, you're in for good.
Yeah, look, Dell said many times ago that I was always riding on his coattails, but I'm happy to wear the suit now.
Beautiful. You keep your car park pass and we'll worry about Dell next week. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to hear us live, you can catch us every Saturday morning on 104.9 Triple M. We'll be back next week, of course, and thanks for listening to us on the Listener app.